With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And off we go. It's a Monday edition of the program, Colchonero Chat. I'm Jeremy, joined by the inimitable Robbie Dunn. How are you, sir?
How you doing, Jeremy? I don't know about that, but thanks very much.
Well, we are going to be talking today, Robbie, about the Madrid derby on Sunday night at the Wanda Metropolitano. A rare Atletico win, Robbie. The first time in 6 years Atleti have won a league derby. And going into the game, the discussion about this one was really weird. Most of it was centered on the Paseo business, which I don't intend to spend much time discussing. But it was going to be always going to be kind of a strange game, given where these two teams are right now, both on and off the pitch. Atleti ultimately getting the 1-0 win via a Yannick Carrasco penalty that brings the team very, very close to qualifying for the Champions League mathematically next season. So let's start, Robbie, with what you think we might be able to take from this game.
I do think that it was... I want to stay balanced here in terms of what I thought Real Madrid, how Real Madrid set up with the 11 that they put out, their attitude just in general for the game. I think they were still in party mode after their midweek heroics against Manchester City. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I do think that Atletico played really well. There was a lot of really good individual performances. I really liked what Simeone did in terms of playing Marcos Llorente as the second striker. I was really impressed again by Mateus Cunha. Yeah. Condogbia played well. Yeah, it's hard to really get a feel for what this means, other than it's 3 points in the bag. It's a nice kind of feel good win against the local the city rival. But I think there was glimpses of, When we talk about what the ideal Atletico Madrid looks like and how they can evolve into a better side, a more consistent and competitive side, this kind of, and not just because they won, but there was times in the first half when it really looked like this especially with Llorente and Mateus Cunha in attack, I think it looked like a setup that could really cause problems for teams.
Yeah, I think that. And I agree with a lot of what you said. And I think, again, it's difficult to analyze because of how the season has gone. And Madrid not really, I don't want to say they didn't care about this game, but Ancelotti rested half a dozen starters, right? Benzema didn't play at all. Modric and Vinicius only came on after the hour. Thibaut Courtois didn't play. Danny Carvajal didn't play. David Alaba didn't play. So, yeah, it was a weird lineup for Madrid. And Atleti, full credit to Atleti for taking advantage of it. Because I spoke with Kian Sobani before the show for a preview pod, and he made the point that all the pressure was going to be on Atletico, right? Because Madrid have done everything they can do this season. They clinched a league with 4 weeks to spare, and they're in a Champions League final. So for Atleti, this was a really important game in the sense that they needed to rise to the occasion in a way that they haven't frequently done this season. And I thought, at the very least, the team's attitude was the correct one. Psychologically, this was a boost.
Yeah, but I will say to that, and I think that Carlos Casemiro came off after an hour or something, and him and Ancelotti were having a giggle, and and they were goal down, and I do know that it was like a preseason friendly for them. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But I think there was a little bit of pressure on Atletico in terms of if they didn't win that, it would have been just bad vibes, and you know. But having said that, I also Atletico are the masters of winning when they've got nothing, and not nothing left to lose, but nothing left to win. And in a way, it was almost I don't know what word you'd use, not goading, but like it was almost like rubbing it in Atletico's faces. Real Madrid are going for a double, Champions League and La Liga double, having demolished the competition in La Liga. And Atletico are here scraping for fourth. And it was kind of like, kind of a bit sad in a way. But having said that, forgetting all that kind of stuff, I do think that on an individual level and and in terms of just the tactics, I think Simeone showed some nice nuance to what he was planning, and I think that a couple of players have showed that they can definitely offer something in a higher pressing system, and but having said that, it doesn't matter because the league is gone, and when it actually mattered, they didn't play that way. And exactly, and that's frustrating. It really is frustrating because we spoke about that, and it's just that when you see Atletico playing like that, and you're exactly right. I mean, the attitude is really good. The pressing, the tackling, Condobie in the middle was excellent. But when it actually mattered, and in a game, and then you just wonder in a game that really really mattered, can Atletico Madrid beat Real Madrid? And I don't know. Like, I mean, so Cunha, I'm just looking here at his minutes, and I understand that he was injured. That was later on in the season, but he played 10 minutes, 19 minutes, 13 minutes, 23, 31, 17, 18, 6, 15, 17, 71. Six, and it kind of got into it then, 22, 18. Like,
and these are all from appearances ranging from August to December, I imagine.
Yeah. Oh, that's from the very first appearance against Villarreal, where he got 10 minutes to all the way through. And then
he starts the game against Mallorca, and then he gets hurt against Levante a couple months later.
Yeah, Levante was. And we've spoken about him before, but I think that this is the kind of guy that... You don't build your team around him, but he can offer something that is... It's a rare thing in La Liga, given the fact that it's not really a high-octane, high-pressing league. I think that the likes of him, paired with someone like Marcos Llorente in attack, could revolutionise this side, really. And I know that sounds a little bit maybe hyperbolic, but... He works so hard, he's so rangy, and he's almost like having another Condogbia, because in attack, because he can close off passing lanes, and he's really aggressive, and then he can play football on top of that. Some of his link up play today was excellent, and he might not score you 20 goals in a season, but he'd probably get you 12 or 15, and if he plays regularly. But and then Marcos Llorente, like, I think that Marcos Llorente is a player, and we saw it yesterday, who he's playing in sixth gear, or he's playing checkers. Sorry, he's playing chess, and everyone else is playing checkers. This team isn't built to accommodate and support and to get the best out of Marcos Llorente, because he wants it. The ball quicker, he wants everything to happen faster, and it just sometimes doesn't with Atletico Madrid, which is their main problem, really. It's just all too slow. But Llorente, if you can say put him there, the problem with playing him as a second striker and having him press like that, I mean, we'll speak about this in a little bit, but you can't play like that for 90 minutes. It's so hard to do, and even less so to do it over the course of a full season, and even less so when you don't have the squad, which we'll speak about.
When you don't have the squad, when you don't have the physical capabilities or the sports science methods that teams in England do.
Exactly, and when you don't, when the fall off, okay, obviously when you play someone's backup, there's going to be a drop in production, there's going to be a drop in quality, but when it's not even so much a drop in quality, there's nobody even like him that could play in that position. So you actually have to play a different system. And that just doesn't work. Then you're just completely relying on your Ente, and that's not really... And this is why Atletico Madrid are going into a summer now where... And I've been critical of Simeone this season, and I do think that he doesn't fully understand exactly what it is that he's trying to do. But I also am understanding of the fact that this isn't a very, very good squad. Yeah, they're going to have to buy players that... Firstly, they're going to have to decide who they want to be, and then go and buy players that are able to carry out the roles that they need within the squad, and have maybe two or three players at each position to do that. Yeah. Even if that means filling in from the academy and stuff, not obviously buying or two or three buying players to build that kind of squad. But they're probably going to have to buy six or seven players.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like, there's a sizable overhaul, coming this summer.
I would say so. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you look at the right back position.
You look at right back. You look at the midfield options, like behind Kondogbia, specifically in that profile, in that position. You look at just the lack of balance in this squad. I think if they invest in a starting quality right back, and if they invest in another pivot to compete with Kondogbia, they will be a much better team. Just if they make those two signings, that will significantly improve them. Now, they need to make more in order to compete at the level of Real Madrid next season, but that'll be a good start. I think Shime Versalco, and not to get too far off topic, I think Versalco is a fighter. I think he's a really gritty player, and I like what he offers defensively, but it is, frankly, a little tragic to watch him in the offensive phase of the game. There's no discernible chemistry with Llorente, and Versalco, unfortunately, because of the knee injuries, just doesn't have that athleticism, that elasticity that he used to have as an attacking fullback. That was the reason why the Trippier sale was so devastating in January, and why Atletico haven't found a way to replace him. They need to do that this summer. Just those two signings would go a long way toward improving Atletico's ceiling for next season, but there needs to be more beyond that. And that is where the debate lies as to what Atletico are going to do, which team they want to be. If they want to be a team that is reminiscent of the earlier Cholo years, then they need to play with a front line that is built around Mateus Cunha's capabilities. If they want to continue primarily having a player bring down long balls out of central defense rather than playing through an opponent's midfield or recruiting players who can play through an opponent's midfield, then Cunha needs to be a starter next season, and they need to roll with it and see just what his ceiling is. I thought he played really well yesterday too. Just so much verticality, agility, intelligence. He wins the penalty that Carrasco converts 5 minutes before halftime. That was the, other than the goal he could have scored in the second half, that was the ideal performance for Cunha, an ideal showcase for him, and he made the most of it.
Yeah, and even those long balls where Atletico are then willing to step up in midfield and win the second balls,
yep.
which is back to the tactics and also the attitude that they showed and the willingness to fight for them. And I'm just being a much more aggressive team and being closer to the, and not letting Real Madrid settle. Now, I do also understand and accept that if Modric starts, it's a different story. And it's also, the problem is, it worked yesterday because Correa played as a right midfield with Nacho playing as left back. If that's Ferland Mendy or another really attacking left back, I don't know if that works with Versalco and Correa. You're going to have to find someone. And like, basically, I've got it. I've got the solution.
You've got it now.
They need to clone Marcos Llorente three times, not just once.
Three times.
Three
okay.
times.
Okay.
Yeah. So the original will have the original, Llorente 2.0, Llorente 3.0, and how many is that?
That's you got three right there.
Okay, so we've got a right back, a right midfielder, an attacker, and then a substitute to bring on. So, no, but I mean, I think, yeah, that's, and I would say Simeone has thought that, like, obviously not cloning players, but he's probably like, I need to play Llorente. I need more Llorentes, like, because he's the right midfielder, and that's perfect for him in that position. Obviously, we saw that last year on their way to the La Liga title. He was just immense. And then he had to be brought in at right back when Trippier left and Voss got injured, which, where is he?
Yeah, Daniel Voss is the forgotten man. What a strange signing that was. Simeone hasn't even thought of using him.
He's not even injured anymore, is he?
No, he's been fit for like the last 6 weeks, and he hasn't played.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
what is going on?
I don't know. And you wrote about that when the signing was made, Robbie, is that what team does Atletico want to be? Like, what is the idea from the front office? What is the idea from the sporting, from Andrea Berto, the sporting director? Because it's a bizarre strategy. Like, it's a half measure. It's a patch. It's a bandage. And it's one that Simeone doesn't even think is feasible, is viable. Really weird to bring in Voss like that.
Yeah. I wondered if something happened, though, because he Simeone fought for that, I think. And then he obviously got injured, but I really don't get that. In the age of the transfer, where transfers solve everything, it's teams are just like, we need, and I understand that players want big squads, big enough squads with players capable of playing, and the Voss one made sense with some logic, that he can play in multiple positions, has La Liga experience, he's played with Bordalas, a kind of an aggressive style, and he set pieces and stuff like that. I get that to an extent, but it's also like, is there nobody else?
Apparently not.
No, I don't mean that. Not that is there nobody else, but it just didn't seem to make that much sense, because he's not even a natural right back.
Right. Like,
you need a right back rather than... I'd rather have a specialist in the case that Atletico needed, so that they could have Versalico and Voss. Now, the injury was really unlucky, so maybe the whole thing would look different without that. But if he's been fit for the last while and he's not playing, then yeah, that's just a really strange transfer. And in the age of the transfer, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Doesn't mean you should. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So So anyway, back to cloning Llorente. How is this going? the high pressing of and the attitude from the with Cunha up there, just he changes the whole look of this team.
I think as badly as Simeone screwed up in the loss in Bilbao last week, that is how well he did on Sunday, aligning the team and picking the proper players to execute this more modern high pressing style. Like Atleti did end up defending in a low block for a good chunk of the second half, especially the last 10 minutes or so when Madrid had a couple of chances. And if Vinicius is able to go at Versalco for more than 25, 30 minutes, this is probably a different result. Versalco was really struggling to track Vinicius Jr. in the latter stages of the second half. And Modric came on and really changed the game. He's going to be doing this until he's in his 40s, I'm convinced. He doesn't stop. He just keeps on going. But I think Simeone has found something here, and I really hope he persists with it and continues to experiment with it in these final three games and into preseason next year. What if a solution, if not the solution, is a 4-3-3? You have this really flexible front line with Cunha, Carrasco and Correa. It was effectively a trident of three in the first half, and almost immediately Correa has a chance that skitters just wide. Carrasco has one a few minutes later that hits side netting after he jukes Casemiro out of his boots. That's in the first 10 minutes of this derby on Sunday. And then Cunha, as we talked about, he has this incredible athleticism and agility and this insistence to press high and win the ball and never give up on the play. I think that is a really, I don't want to reuse the word modern, but this is a much more, I guess, athletic way. I think it gives Atleti a higher ceiling if you play with three forwards. And it also gets the best out of Koke. Koke played really well on Sunday, one of his best games of the season. Now, of course, we can ask this with several Atletico players. Where was this in September? Where was this in October, November, December? Why are we only seeing it now against a Real Madrid team resting most of their best players? I don't know. And we aren't going to know. Maybe some stuff comes out in the next weeks, months about what has gone wrong this season. Maybe it doesn't. But I thought this was a really good Koke game. He was in more advanced playmaking roles. He was able to receive more progressive passes, try to spring players loose from the left side of a 4-3-3. And this is where he plays for Spain, for Luis Enrique's Spain. And he is still, despite his struggles at club level, an undisputed starter for the national team. So it's clear that there is still a player there, but Simeone has not been able to get the best out of Koke because he's been sticking him in central midfield where he's been overrun for pretty much the entire season. This was a really good game for Koke, a great game for Carrasco. Should Atleti hang on to him, Robbie? I mean, I know he's 28 going on 29 and he wants one last big contract. Newcastle or Tottenham might come in for him with a big offer. Do you hang on to Carrasco at all costs? Is he that unique an individual player, that special a talent?
I would say it depends. If you're not keeping Griezmann, I would say Carrasco, yeah. But obviously that depends on what kind of a silly bid comes in from the Premier League. I wouldn't be at all costs by any stretch. No, I think that you can... Because I was going to jump in and say you read my mind in terms of the 4-3-3, but then the tree that you mentioned, obviously it was a different tree that you mentioned, but if you put a tree of Cunha at the top with Joao Felix and Marcos Llorente... In the tree, Condogbia are a number five with Koke and Rodrigo de Paul or Saul.
Yeah,
and then invest properly in your fullback in your back four, so you get competition at right back, two really good right backs, Jimenez and Savage are fine, but more competition there.
The injuries are just really problematic look after, for them.
And then Reinildo, and then maybe Lodi as a fullback. No, get a proper fullback instead of this kind of hybrid player. Lodi is a winger, wingback. So that's you get your four sorted, and then you've got your three. Because Kondogbi, I think, has come on massively, and I think that the reason why Koke played so well yesterday was partly because of the intensity of the game in general, but also because everyone was doing it, and he wasn't the one that was. He can't be the one to lead a press. He's absolutely fine as part of a press, but he can't be the one doing it all. And with Cunha and Llorente leading the press, it meant that Koke had an extra half a second to get closer, and it put the Real Madrid players under that little bit more pressure, and all of a sudden Koke wasn't as exposed as he is when players have the ball turned facing goal and are running at him, because that's when there's trouble. Not just for Koke, by the way, for anyone.
Yeah,
it's really, really hard to play against a team that's able to do that, and to not have the backup beside you, and then to have a leaky back four where you're hedging your bets, you're not really going. And if Atletico have a back four and Jan Oblak there to absorb any player, any threat that comes through, it means that they can be a bit more aggressive in what they're doing in the middle of the field, whereas before, and this happened and earlier on in the season more so, but Atletico were just so screwed because they were so afraid of exposing the back line that they ended up just just melting in the middle of the field, because they're like, what do I do? Because if I step out, we're finished.
Mm-hmm.
But if I drop back, I'm inviting it. And it was just one big mess. So, like you said, a 4-3-3 with obviously different personnel. My first choice three would be Llorente, Cunha, and Joao Felix, and that would be. I mean, that's a really, really, really tasty front three.
And I think with Llorente on the right side of that 4-3-3, you get more width, because an issue, if not the issue, with the 4-3-3 is, how do you generate sufficient width? Like, how do you generate enough danger in wide areas? But I think that flexibility the tactical and just in terms of these players' characteristics. Like, we know the special talent that Joao Felix is. We know how good he is with the ball at his feet, how he just shrugs off pressure, and is such a creative player, such a unique profile. We know that Cunha can do a bunch of Diego Costa-like dirty work. With Cunha, it's such an interesting case because I'm not exactly sure what his ceiling is, how high his ceiling is. I'm still not really sure if this is a guy who you start him regularly, he can go bag you 20 to 25 goals. I'm not sure if Cunha is going to be that player, but I can't rule it out either. He's still so young. He's 23 years old. This is his first season in Madrid, and he's shown a capacity and a capability to improve this team's attacking ceiling in a way that a few of the other forward options here just haven't consistently done.
But if you look at, and everyone's raving about Barcelona, their business and everything, the front three, Cunha versus Aubameyang. Aubameyang 10 years ago, I'm taking Aubameyang.
Sure,
but
yeah.
Cunha, I'm probably, that's a 50-50 there. Now, Aubameyang scores more goals, but Cunha offers more pressing and as you said, a modern kind of style.
Just the energy, the intensity he plays with. Yeah.
And then Ferran Torres versus Marcos Llorente. They're very, very different players, so we're kind of apples and oranges.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a break even. And then Ousmane Dembele and Joao Felix. Look, you're looking at it. That's as competitive a front three as you're going to get. And you look at Real Madrid. Okay, Benzema, world class. But he is going on, what is Benzema, 34? Yeah.
He's not slowing down, but he is 34.
Yeah, Benzema, Vinicius, and Valverde. Valverde or Llorente? I'm probably picking Llorente. And then Vinicius and Joao Felix? I mean, I don't know. That's a tough one. I know Vinicius has been good, but it's because of the system he's playing in and the situation he's in. So, I don't know. And you're right, and there's issues of width there, but if you get a proper right-back,
that
and
helps.
You play Rodrigo de Paul or Saul or whoever it happens to be there to slot in at right back when necessary, all of a sudden you get the width from your fullback because things are stable at the back and you've got cover there. So I don't know. I think Simeone has a lot of thinking to do, but I think he has shown a willingness, at least. I don't think he fully understands yet and what it is that he wants to do or is trying to do. But I think that he has at least shown a willingness to try and change this team and system. And I think because of the situation with the squad and the injuries and everything, we haven't actually seen exactly what it is that he wants to do. I still think he plays in like... And when we say 4-3-3, that's just a concept almost. Like it's 4-3-3 in attack. In defence, it would be a 4-4-2, like maybe...
And you have Llorente and or Joao Felix drop into the midfield line.
Yeah, exactly. Like alternating whatever side of the field it's on.
Yeah.
So I think Simeone is still a 4-4-2, a proponent of the 4-4-2. Is that a correct word? A proponent of the 4-4-2?
Yeah, I suppose so. I guess advocate's probably more accurate
than advocate.
Proponent. But proponent is said frequently.
Oh, no, it's a proponent. A person who advocates a theory, proposal, or a course of action.
There you go.
So Simeone's a strong proponent of the 4-4-2. And I still think that is the case. But in attack, it can be a little bit more hybrid and a 4-3-3 or a bit more attacking. And you can solve the rest of the problems well, that's up to him, but the details of it, I mean. But I think yesterday was promising, but I would also be realistic in the fact that this was a preseason friendly for Real Madrid.
Yeah, and if Madrid had been going full tilt, this probably would have been a different result. But conversely, Atletico could have won this game by multiple goals, Robbie. There were several chances that went begging. Correa and Carrasco inside the first 10 minutes. Cunha from a Griezmann assist in the second half. A Griezmann shot assist in the second half. Carrasco hits the post in the second half. Griezmann misses a sliding finish after he comes on for Correa at halftime. Yeah, this could have easily been 2 or 3-0, which would have I'm not sure how much differently it would have changed the perception, but the scoreline would have been something, you know. But a win is a win. This is what Atleti will take from this game. The expected goals, I want to say Atleti generated 2.5 to just over 1 for Real Madrid. So the 1-0 is a little bit deceptive, but not in the way that we ordinarily would think when these two teams meet. We've mentioned Saul a couple times on the show today, Robbie, and we haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about him this season because he's, well, not here. He's been at Chelsea. But the expectation is that he comes back this summer and he's going to fight for a place in the first team. How much do you think Atleti have missed him this season, and does he have a role to play in the 2022-23 vintage of Atletico Madrid?
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on which Saúl Ñíguez you're asking about, because the Saúl Ñíguez that broke through, Atletico missed him massively, but the Saúl we saw in the last year or two of his Atletico is Atletico player, but previously, he just wasn't offering anything, and I just wonder what the reason for that was and why he has struggled so much then at Chelsea. Maybe he just needed a break, a reset, and he'll come back now and he'll come back to Atletico and refreshed and ready to fight again, and he'll have learned a lot from the Premier League and how the physicality of from that, and maybe Simeone will understand a little bit better exactly what it is he wants from him and is asking from him. And yeah, maybe sometimes a change is as good as a rest, and for him it's the changes going to Chelsea might have helped him, but again we won't know until we see what exactly Simeone has up his sleeve, and also which version of Saul returns.
Yeah, I think it's still, even though we're now into the month of May, it's still a difficult question to answer. Even though we're now into May and Champions League football for next season is practically almost mathematically secured, there's still a lot we don't know. There's still a lot that is fluid and up in the air. Saul's versatility has done him no favors for a large chunk of his Atleti career. Simeone moved him around the chessboard for, I think, several reasons, and the player never liked it much. I can understand why. He was brought up as a central midfielder and his career got off to such a great start, and then it stagnated after 2017-18. He just kind of stopped growing as a player, and he hasn't made tangible progress. He's taken steps backward actually in the past probably 2-3 seasons particularly. It's a difficult one, and you also have to consider which position he's going to play. Like, is he going to be a patch at left back? Is he going to be a winger? Is he going to compete for minutes in central midfield with guys like Kondogbia, Depaul, Lemar, Koke? Because that's a battle he's probably not going to win.
Yeah, and I think that this comes back again to the squad issues. And I think that for some players, Marcos Llorente, we've seen this season, has struggled to adapt. He's played in a whole load of different positions this season for Atletico, and he seems to have been able to manage it a little bit better, but his performance has definitely dropped. And we saw yesterday he's really, really frustrated, a really, really frustrated player, and those frustrations can manifest themselves in different ways. For Llorente, it manifests itself as him just being even more energetic than normal, just running around looking for the ball. Whereas for Saul, it manifested itself as he just didn't know what to do, like, and where he was going to be playing. And it feels like that uncertainty kind of bled into his game. So if Atletico recruit wisely in the summer and actually get a proper right back and a replacement to the point where Llorente will be third choice rather than being second choice, or Saul will be third choice rather than second choice. And this has been an ongoing issue. And I think that I remember Thomas Partey playing right back for Atletico.
Oh yeah.
You know, this has been ongoing for a number of years now, with Saul being played there, Llorente being played there, and okay, oh, it's great, and it's wow, these guys are so versatile, but it's not right. It's not right either. It's not their position.
Jose Jimenez played there too for a little while.
Yeah, And
yeah,
they went, like Santiago Arias came in.
Santiago Arias, another forgotten man at Granada. Arias,
Versalco, and Versalco's only there now because Trippier is gone. But when you look at it, when Trippier was with Atletico, they were a completely different side. Way more creative, more width, more creativity from the right hand side, and I think that they really need to invest in that position during the summer with a player that Diego Simeone really really wants. And we'll get to see exactly what Simeone's plan is, but I think it will help the mental health of the players or their ability to plan and prepare and get the feeling for a position, because like I said, it manifests itself in different ways with different players. Some players can accept that, and other players find it hard to keep moving around all the time, and it's like I can't get comfortable. I need to build up these automations with the different players and stuff around me, and I need to kind of locate myself within the position that you're playing me rather than being moved around a lot. So it's a massive summer for Atletico, and I think maybe last summer they thought that it was a finished product with just some bells and whistles to add. And we taught that. I taught that too. I mean,
to be fair, they had just won the league. I think a lot of people thought that. This is a team that had just won La Liga. Like, it doesn't get better than that in Spanish football.
But they added Rodrigo de Paul, and it would look fine. Everything looked good. But then we obviously saw that wasn't
it was not good.
It wasn't good. So there's no pretenses here this summer. I think they know that they're seriously, they've fallen behind a resurgent Barcelona and Real Madrid who just continue to defy the logic, but are also being chased now by Sevilla, Betis
and La Real.
Yeah, exactly. So if any of those three clubs and Sevilla continue to make the progress that they're making, and Atletico continue to struggle as they have this season, you're looking at a massive fight for Champions League again next season.
Again next year, you're looking at a very similar scenario. And at least I hope the club understands that they have rather quickly fallen behind the pack in front of them. And then there's the teams that we just mentioned, Villarreal, La Real, Betis, all behind them, all, I think, capable of taking another step next year. We'll see how Betis retains that team. We'll see how many of those players come back next season. I think there's going to be interesting, and guys like Guido Rodriguez. I think there will be rumors about Fekir, but et cetera. But as long as Pellegrini is there, the style they're going to play, and their ceiling remains pretty high, remains European football. So Atleti need to understand that, and Simeone needs to understand it too. He at least understood that this Atletico Madrid side needed to continue evolving to avoid being figured out, to avoid being pigeonholed or shoehorned into one box. But the attempts to evolve the team this season have resulted in getting shoehorned, right? Have been square peg, round hole solutions. 30, 40 different starting 11s, multiple different systems, sometimes during the same game. The need to evolve is great, and that Simeone has recognized that is great. It will serve the club well in the short and medium terms, as long as he is still the coach here. But he needs to have a clearer idea of what it is he wants to do, rather than just saying, we need to evolve, well, tell me how you need to evolve. What are the things that you are looking to accomplish, instead of just having these different players play the same system that you played 6, 7, 8 years ago? That doesn't work. As we have seen this season, that does not work. So the players need to buy in. Simeone needs to be clear on what he wants in the transfer market and how he wants this team to play. And if those things happen, and if Atletico just nail this summer, then next season could be a lot different. It could be a lot more enjoyable. And this game against Real Madrid, in a vacuum, it doesn't matter much, right? But I think that we can glean a few interesting short and medium term factors from this game that could determine how Atleti do next season. I think Condogbia needs to stay he's become a very important midfielder. I think Cunha needs to have a bigger role next season, and they need to sort out, obviously a couple of players are going to go, they're going to make a couple of big sales, they need to sort out who's getting sold, they're going to need to sort out the best way, the most efficient way to replace these players, reinforce the midfield, reinforce the defense, and try again. But make sure these are players that meet Simeone's specifications too, because this is a highly specific system. These are highly specific characteristics and qualities that the coach wants. And I think with several transfers over the years, Atleti's transfer policy at boardroom level versus Simeone's transfer policy have been, they've clashed heads, right? They've been in direct confrontation with one another, and there needs to be more synchronicity. There needs to be more harmony this summer in what the club looks for.
Yeah, and I think that, that's exactly back to the point that I was making. We probably underestimate the amount of change that can happen in a season. A season is a really long period of time. So, like, to suggest that Simeone picks a strategy and goes with it forever, and for the whole season, that's it. Things change and you have to adapt, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But there has to be some kind of coherency. It can't be fighting fires 2 months into the season or 3 months into the season, which has actually become a trend during Simeone's tenure, maybe for the last 5 or 6 years, where Atletico start really poorly and all the plans for the preseason are out the window after 6 weeks, and it's like, okay, we're not going to have to figure this out now, and then all of a sudden you're chasing the season again. And I think that once, yeah, and that was starts this summer with a coherent strategy, a plan to bring in the kind of players that are going to work, with contingencies and everything thought through, and I think that obviously things pop up during the season, but having as many of those contingency plans, like for example Kieran Trippier, I know it's difficult and there's not the kind of money, you can't just have people sitting around waiting for Kieran Trippier to leave, or you can't like sign his replacement before he leaves, but they knew that he was leaving they knew that he really wanted to leave in the summer, and you know, they obviously knew that he was probably going to ask to leave again in January, and they allowed that to happen, and that's fine, but they didn't even bring in anyone to, well, they signed Daniel Voss at the 11th hour, but again, back to the point,
Voss hasn't played, though, that's the thing.
And he hasn't played.
You signed him, and Simeone does not count on him.
And he's not even a right back in the mold of
right.
Really Kieran Trippier, and so would they not have maybe brought in someone during the summer to fight with Trippier, and obviously they had Versalco, but that's a different profile too. It's going to be an interesting summer for sure.
Well, before we get there, Atleti have to play out the string here. Champions League qualification, we have to reiterate, is not mathematically secured yet. Atletico need 3 more points, 1 more win from these final 3 games to do it, and they can get that win as soon as Wednesday, Robbie, against an Elche side that, surprisingly, is going to be in La Liga for a third consecutive year next year. They've practically secured mathematical safety themselves. They're 7 points clear of the relegation pack, Mallorca in 18th. So they need, 2 more points? 3 more points? They need 1 more win themselves. How do you see this game at the Martinez Valero going on Wednesday?
This is another problem that we speak about. Atletico tend to play better against teams that want the ball and are ambitious. Elche are fighting for their lives, and yeah, it could cause problems for Atletico. What do they do? This is the never ending problem for Diego Simeone. Do they play like they did before and press and try to be aggressive and try to maybe score 2 or 3 early, or do they kind of sit and wait? I think the fact that Real Betis have kind of, Atletico are 6 points clear. There's no way Atletico are dropping 6 points, and Real Betis are winning their all their last 3 games. Yeah, I just think that, and that gives Atletico a little bit of a little bit of leeway to be a little bit more aggressive than they would normally like to be when there's something really, really on the line. If this really was on the line, I would be concerned for Atletico. But the fact that they can play with a little bit more freedom, I think that they probably should win it.
Marco Llorente won't play. He is suspended due to yellow card accumulation. Reinildo won't play either, Robbie, as he left the derby with 20 minutes to go on Sunday due to a muscular injury. The club ruled out a muscular tear in their medical report this morning. Thankfully, that would have been really sad to read. So, no Llorente, no Reinildo. Hermoso will be eligible for selection after his one-game suspension ended. Still no Joao Felix and no Tomolema. So, again, Atleti will be shorthanded. They'll be down, what, four players there? Even still, you got to think they should have enough to beat Elche. Although this is an Elche team that went to Betis and won at the Via Marin a couple weeks ago, just before the cup final that Betis ultimately won. They have a couple players who are reportedly of interest to Atletico in the upcoming transfer window. Forward Lucas Boye and fullback Johan Mojica, who, according to one artificial intelligence firm, Robbie, is like the best left back on the continent. 2 goals, 5 assists for him this season.
Former Rayo Vallecano left back, I'll have you know. Jeremy.
That's right. That is true.
Yeah, I like him. He's aggressive. He's really, really aggressive. Actually, that's one thing that used to surprise me with him, how aggressive he is. But more of a left wing back than a left back. So let's see if he might fit in for Atletico, or whether they go for him, or what the plan is there at all.
I like Boye too, although the upside there with him is pretty modest, given he's now in his mid-20s. But he's the kind of forward who Simeone would covet, right? He's a guy who can lead the line on his own, really aggressive, pressing in the middle third and attacking third, holds up the ball well, can score a goal from relatively few shots on target. I think he has 7 from 15 shots on target this season, something like that. He's overperformed his expected goals mark.
Yeah, and exactly like you said. I mean, that this is exactly what the kind of player that Simeone would like, as an attacker, can lead the line but not the kind of player that moves the needle that far in your right direction either.
Yeah, he's not someone that's not a star signing, right? That's not someone who draws a lot of social media engagement. That's not someone who gets the fans excited. But he's a player who can do a job, and he's available for a 25 million release clause. That is, if you're doing the math, Robbie, 1/4 of a Darwin Nunez.
Yeah, but it's not going to matter because you're going to have 4 Marcus Llorentes next season.
That's right. So, I'm just going to clone him.
Marcus Llorentes is that? It's like,
just going to clone Marcos 4 times and we'll be good to go. Where do you think Darwin ends up? Like, apropos of nothing, because so many teams are chasing him.
Ooh, I don't really know. I mean, Man City have basically confirmed that they're signing Darwin Nunez. Or sorry, they're signing Alan. Manchester City haven't. Fabrizio Romano has said that. I don't know. I wonder. Like, I mean, this is the first summer pre-proper pandemic. I think last summer we were still kind of a little bit uncertain about what was going to happen. But I think we're going to see a lot of movement this summer. Although, having said that, with the World Cup coming up, it could work both ways. Some players might be reluctant to move because they want to stay in their current environment in order to get the game time they need to make sure they make the squad for their national team. But then others will want to make a move. Like, say, for example, someone like Dani Ceballos is going to probably want to move in order to put himself maybe in Luis Enrique's thoughts for the World Cup. Given the fact that there's no World Cup, but a World Cup coming up might mean there's going to be a lot of movement. I don't know. Man United, I don't know how they're even going to play under Erik ten Hag. I don't know, it's going to be interesting because Luka Jovic, a 60 million euro striker, is going to leave Real Madrid, I would imagine. And he goes back, there's loads of really interesting footballers that are probably going to be available, and there's going to be a lot of movement around the place. And another player, actually, I don't know what his story is, but another player that never was for Atletico Madrid, Rafael Santos Borre.
Yeah, now at Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah. Like, I mean, what's going to happen with him? Like, he's basically leading Frankfurt to a Europa League final, and a player who could, I'm not saying Atletico will be in for him, but like, kind of player who could. Could do a job for someone in Spain, a Sevilla or someone like that. Yeah, I think there's going to be loads of movement, and just kind of went off on a bit of a digression there. But yeah, it could be an interesting summer all around.
But yeah, all these forwards are kind of linked in a way, because the teams that didn't get Dusan Vlahovic or Erling Haaland will be in for Darwin Nunez. That's why Nunez has so many suitors, is because all these teams did not get the top two options on the market. And then that creates a domino effect. Like, what on earth are Man United going to do this summer? No one seems to know.
There's another Memphis Depay is probably going to be.
Memphis is going to leave Barca. Yeah, and I think there's going to be quite a bit of Premier League interest in him.
Yeah, but he's the kind of player. And Darwin Nunez, another player. Darwin Nunez probably isn't going to sign. Like, he's not really at the top level. But he does fall into the category of maybe a Spurs, United in their current form, and Atletico Madrid. Not that they're in the market for a nine, but it feels like he probably needs to go to a club like that first before making a potential leap into a different stratosphere with the likes of Real Madrid or Man City or Munich or someone like that, you know. These players are all linked, and Depay could go. I don't know. He's tried two massive clubs now. United at the time were massive, still are a massive club, but they were. That was under
Van Gaal when he went to United.
Yeah, Van Gaal. Yeah. So they were still kind of trying to convince themselves that they were serious contenders. So he's tried the Premier League. I think he's probably too good to be in France, other than PSG, and I don't know if he'd fit at PSG. So maybe he might want to stay in Spain or try Germany. I don't know. Or maybe he might just stay at Barcelona. It's all just speculation. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting summer. With no international tournament this summer, it's practically just all going to be transfer rumors. Like, there's going to be no international football to watch. It will just be rumor mill churning day after day after day. How exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
How fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in the interim, that'll do it for this edition of Colts Nero Chat. I want to thank Robbie Dunn, my guest, for joining me on today's show. Thank you, Robbie.
No problem at all, Jeremy. We'll chat to you soon.
And we will be back at some point this week to discuss the Elche game and get set for the Sevilla game at the Wanda Metropolitano on Saturday. Right now, it's looking like that's a bigger game for Sevilla than it is for Atletico, but we'll have to see what happens on Wednesday. Does Julen Lopetegui stay at Sevilla past this season, Robbie? I know you're a fanboy.
Yeah, I am a fanboy. I think he's going to stay, given the fact that what he recently came out and said, I'm where I want to be. I think the United job would have been ideal for him, but obviously that's gone. And I just don't see, there's no job big enough for him, because he is ready for the next step. And he's obviously not. PSG, and I don't think he'll go to PSG, and this is just a question aside, but PSG haven't announced a replacement for Pochettino, have they?
I don't think they have. I don't think it's common knowledge, but it's close. they want a clean house there.
Who? Oh, they want a clean... Oh, yeah. Well, I think Pochettino's is... I think that's...
Is it confirmed?
Maybe as good as confirmed. Anyway, I think Lopetegui is ready for the next move above Sevilla or into that next level, but I just don't think that the jobs are available there yet. Maybe Chelsea might become available and he might be interested in that, but until something happens there, I would say Sevilla is his best bet to continue on his project with his work, building his reputation and turning Sevilla into a consistent Champions League side. And with a couple more signings, I think they might be able to achieve that with him.
Well, we will have plenty more time to discuss that later this week on the next edition of the show. In the meantime, thank you all for listening and for your continued support. You can sign up on patreon.com/culturenarrowchat for more bonus audio programming and exclusive goodies. Spotify, you can subscribe to the Atletico Madrid Podcast Network on Spotify. You get access to all the most recent episodes of our show, Colchonero Chat, and our sister program, the Partido a Partido Podcast. Thank you all again for listening. We will Colchonero Chat again with you soon. Adios.